Welcome to Dancin' Moon Songcast. I'm Scott Simpson, casting from Dancin' Moon Studio in Spearfish Canyon on the north end of the Black Hills of South Dakota, right on the banks of the Spearfish Creek. If you'd like to follow along, you can download a free PDF of my lyric book from scottsimpsonmusic.com/lyrics. And of course, you can find links to all my music there as well. So let's get casting and find out what song we're going to talk about this time. This episode of Dancin' Moon Songcast, we're going to take a look at Play-Doh Boy from 2012's Nebraska Catfish LP. That's Play-Doh Boy from the Nebraska Catfish LP, 2012. So we'll listen to that now and talk a little bit about it on the other side.
Thank you. 11, 12, 13, 14, Play-Doh Boy.
Play-Doh Boy from 2012's Nebraska Catfish. And we're going to talk about the song in just a little bit and the lyrics and a little bit about the album and all of that. But I'd like to start out with something a little different. As many of you know, I'm an educator. And this song grows out of my experiences in middle school as a student. And then bringing those experiences to bear on my own work as a teacher, as an educator, and especially as someone who works with educators to support them in their work. I think it's really important for us to be reflective in ways that we look back at our own experiences as students, because whether we realize it or not, whether we're conscious about it or not, those experiences influence us and impact us then. The rest of our lives, and especially if you become a teacher, those experiences as a student have a huge impact on what you do as a teacher with your own students. So it's good to become aware of them and reflective about it and think about it and make conscious decisions about directions. So the song was written actually while in retreat, probably in 2011. I do retreats with teachers. We do a lot of reflective work, and some of that work is looking back at our own, our own experiences. And this was something that came out of some journaling and reflective work of my own. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, but I'd like to start, actually there's a blog post, that I'd like to read, to start this episode off, because a few years ago, around the time that I put out the album, I also was doing some work, created a whole course and a website called Teaching From Within. And there was a blog post on that called Unintended Lessons that really has a lot to do with the specifics of this song. So I'm going to start there with reading this blog post. It's not too long, and then we'll get into the song after this. But I think this will set a good stage for us in talking about the song. Begins with a quote from Henry David Thoreau. What lies behind us and what lies ahead of us are tiny matters compared to what lives within us. Henry David Thoreau. By sixth grade, I had learned a few things about school, about learning, and about my relationship to both. I don't think these were really the things my teachers wanted me to learn, but the outside-in approach to teaching that they seemed locked into had resulted in a real split between who I was as a human being and what it seemed I was supposed to do as a human doing. The doing focus of school said essentially that what was most important either lay behind me, test scores and grades I needed to live up to or overcome, or lay ahead of me, how I would do on the next test or assignment. Very little of this tapped into what or who I was and what mattered to me right then and there. I had learned they will make you do boring stuff that seems to be pointless. Because it's pointless and boring, it's good for you. They will sometimes offer you special prizes to do the stuff. They will create special punishments for those who don't do the stuff. They will construct the whole school in ways that make it really difficult not to do the stuff. They will give you an occasional break from doing the boring stuff, like offering mini courses between quarters that are fun, but really have nothing to do with school or learning. Whatever you care about, keep it to yourself. They might use it against you. Be away from school as much as you can. Pray for snow days. Live for summer break, Christmas break, spring break. Live in the gaps between learning. And most importantly, for me personally, even when they show you or tell you something interesting in class, something you read, some science experiment, some tale from history, don't let them know you care about it. And for heaven's sake, don't do any hard work on a project or a paper. They'll only begin to expect that kind of work from you all the time. So by the time I arrived at middle school, the excitement that I had for music, for writing, for drawing, for recording and performing, for make-believe, for watching ants or climbing trees and studying leaves, none of that fit into the compartment in my brain that was labeled learning or school. And because school had taught me that learning was always a painful thing, something that wouldn't come naturally or have its own built-in rewards, something that came from the outside authority who was offering prizes or punishments to keep me going, I felt a bit guilty over whatever I was passionate about. As much as I loved these things, they were really just stupid. So at some point, I thought, so was I, just stupid. So that kind of gives you some insight into my philosophy on learning and school and what's important and maybe how we've struggled in the past and continue to struggle in doing this whole school and learning and teaching thing in a really healthy and productive way that honors human beings. And so with that in mind, we'll take a look at the song. As I said, it came out of some journaling that happened during retreat, reflecting on my own schooling, particularly during those middle school years, the ages of 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, that becomes a big part of the song. And then kind of a metaphor that occurred to me for that sort of approach in school. So we'll take a look at the lyrics and talk a little bit about those ideas. Play-Doh Boy. It begins, and actually it pulls, when I was doing the recording, I pulled some vocals and some lyrics from further down into the song. I pulled them up into the front of the song and put them kind of echoey in the background as an intro. I was doing a lot of experimentation both with the vocal stuff as well as ethereal kind of mix, mostly acoustic instruments, piano, guitar, mandolin, but they're kind of echoing and coming in and out and that sort of thing, and some interesting layered vocals with the harmonies, not your kind of your standard fare, but we'll begin with those intro vocals and then get into the verses. He had a cassette recorder. He had songs in his head. He placed them into the microphone. And that repeats over and over a few times in that intro. We'll talk about that, those lines later in the song when they come up in the song. And then Play-Doh Boy, Play-Doh Boy, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, Play-Doh Boy. Middle school is a Play-Doh factory. Put them in and push the plunger down, Play-Doh Boy. He lost the top of his head. He lost the tips of his fingers. Play-Doh Boy, Play-Doh Boy, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, Plato boy. So here in this first verse, we've got the setting, middle school. If you ever had a Play-Doh factory, you know what I'm talking about. And I will post, I did make a music video that I'll post so you can see what one looks like. Those of you who are probably any age over 20 have seen a Play-Doh factory, but the Play-Doh Fun Factory was this thing that I think they first came up with them probably in the early 60s. But you put the Play-Doh in, and then you'd push this big plunger down, and it would squirt the Play-Doh out, and you had these different sorts of shapes that you could squirt it into. So come out, some were like stars, and others looked like spaghetti, and different, and then logs, and snakes, and tubes, and different things like that. So this is the Play-Doh, and, you know, it was lots of fun. But it occurred to me, when you take something that's really malleable, something that's really, it's got form, but it's easily shaped, it's easily changed, and then you put it under pressure and you squish it out like that. You do this sort of violence to it, forcing it through a hole that makes it come out the other end in a shape that you've decided it needs to be in. That seemed to me to be a good metaphor for the more violent aspects of our approaches to education. And not every teacher, not every school, and certainly not all throughout time, but definitely there were those moments when I felt like a malleable Play-Doh boy stuffed into a fun factory under pressure, being pushed into a shape that I wasn't sure what it was, and I wasn't even sure that that's who I was. But feeling that pressure to be something that you are not, or to become something that you are unsure of, that's a terrifying thing, and it's a traumatic thing, and it's something that many, many students, and I would say at some level every student in our system, experiences. And so that's what this song is about. Put them in and push the plunger down. And then those lines, he lost the top of his head, he lost the tips of his fingers. I think in my mind, if you recall back way back in the day, Saturday Night Live, they had a character, a recurring character, Mr. Bill, who was actually made of Play-Doh. And Mr. Bill would you know, talk in this high voice, "Oh, no, and that sort of thing. And then something horrible would happen to him, and something would fall on him or cut him in half, or he'd be mutilated in some way. And, you know, it was just a Play-Doh thing. But I think I was thinking about the parts of ourselves that we lose, the parts of ourselves that we lose when we're put under pressure in this sort of factory-oriented sort of institution. He lost the top of his head. He lost the tips of his fingers. In my mind, he lost the things that were precious in his thinking. He lost the things, some of the extremities, some of the things that he used to touch, to feel, to reach, to make things. What things are lost by students who are forced into this kind of pressureful assimilation? We get into the next verse. Nobody ever asked him. He would have told them. He liked drawing. You know, he liked the summer grass, Play-Doh boy. He loved the smell of dirt. He loved to watch the ants carrying the dead back home. And I remember as a child, those things, I could just get distracted for hours and hours watching ants, or being down in the dirt and the grass. I loved creative things, drawing. And if no one ever points at that and says, "Hey, do you like that? Is that interesting? Oh, I find. What do you think about that? Have you ever watched those?" If you're in this place of higher learning, and it's very competitive, and you're being measured against other people, and you're being measured against how quickly you do things or how well you do things, you begin to think that these things that you were very interested in before may be kind of stupid. they may be kind of embarrassing. Maybe you shouldn't tell people about the ants. Maybe you shouldn't admit that you kind of like imagining things. Plato boy, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, Plato boy. He had a cassette recorder. He had songs in his head. He placed them into the microphone, Plato boy. Sitting in the plat, he felt the coolness steal the sand downstream, Plato boy. Nobody ever asked him. He would have told them. He would have told them all. Sometimes it's just a matter of asking. Sometimes it's just a matter of opening the door. For some student who has a lot of things going on, a lot of important things, a lot of stuff, but they're assuming nobody really cares. Nobody really wants to hear that. Nobody wants to hear anything from you. They need to be invited. They need to be asked. What is it you enjoy? What do you see in that? What do you like to do? How do you like to spend your time? So this last verse talks about a number of things. My parents bought a cassette recorder when I was a kid, and I just remember just loving that, just telling stories into it, making up songs into it, doing crazy voices into it, and doing all those things and having them and knowing that I had done this thing and I had it on this cassette. Sitting in the plat, I grew up in Nebraska, hence the name of the album, Nebraska Catfish. I remember sitting in the Platte River. I remember in the summertime sitting in the Platte River down by our camp, our youth camp, and feeling the sand just wash out, feeling the flow of the water just pull the sand out from under me on the sandbar. And that feeling, I love to feel those movements that change the movement of water flowing over and sand being dug out by the water and the flowing of the river. And those are not things you admit when you're in middle school. You don't say, I like that stuff. Plato boy, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, Plato boy, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, Plato boy. And we get to the kind of the transition of the bridge. The factory, they had holes like stars. They had holes like snakes and flowers, holes like spaghetti. The factory, they had holes like stars, and everybody likes stars. Everybody likes stars. Push the plunger down. Push the plunger down. Push the plunger down. So the pressure of being there in the factory, in the school, where there's an expectation and what you're supposed to be and what you're supposed to like and what you're supposed to value is being reshaped and reformed, and everybody's in agreement. Oh, this is the way it should be. This is what a good student looks like. This is what somebody smart, this is what somebody who's talented looks like. This is what it is. This is what it is. You better be that. And if that doesn't fit with who you thought you were, you just kind of submit. Or you rebel. And I did a little bit of both. But this song, I think, is about that submission. Push the plunger down. I feel this sadness with that. Push this plunger down. It's a little bit like, yeah, okay, I'll submit. I'll give up who I am for who you want me to be. How can we ask students to do that? It's dehumanizing. And so as educators, as teachers, we have to look at our practices and we have to say, what are we asking of our students? What's behind my technique? What's behind the way I structure my environment? Am I saying you're not good enough, so become something else, become something that I've decided for you? Or am I saying you are amazing? How can I help you become the best you? The you that you are always destined to be. How can I help you be that? How can I help you make it there? That's what we should be saying. So we have another 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, Plato boy, Plato boy. And then we get near the end. He could have been anything. He could have been anything. And of course, this could be she, because there are lots of Plato girls too. Plato boy. Plato boy, there's all kinds of stars. There's all kinds of stars. Plato boy, Plato boy, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Plato boy, Plato boy. You know, when I was growing up, stars were the sign that you had done it right. Boy, you get that gold star, whether it was in Sunday school or school. Boy, if you do it right, you get the star, a little sticker star on there. And if you did it really well, you probably got a bunch of stars on there. And everybody loves stars. Everybody wants stars. And so I think the message here is there's all kinds of stars. And you don't have to be going for the stars that everybody says you're supposed to be going for. That may not be you. You got to be who you are. You got to be who you are. So as an educator, that's impacted me a lot. As a person who works with educators, which is what I do now and have done for a number of years, it's so incredibly important for us to have empathy for students. And the best way that I know of to do that is to go back to who I was as when I was just a student. And the wonderful things and the painful things that happened to me in school. And then as an adult, make decisions about how I'm going to structure things in my classroom. As a parent, as an adult in any setting working with younger people, how do I honor and respect their humanity and still be a good guide, still be a good mentor, still be a good facilitator for learning? So that's what the song's about. As I said, a lot of experimentation, layering of vocals. The harmonies that are in there are kind of, I don't know, they're almost like a drone. It's not your typical sort of vocal. I'm right now working on a presentation, and I'll be doing this song live. It's going to sound different. It's going to be a little more simple and a little more straightforward, just me and a guitar. But it was a lot of fun to play around, and there's a haunting feel, and I wanted that because it's a frightening thing. I mean, we're talking about a Play-Doh factory, but we're talking about something that's frightening. We're talking about something that's dehumanizing, and I think it still happens, and it happens a lot, and I think it happens oftentimes in ways that we don't realize. And so that's the focus of the song. Well, thank you so much for joining me today for Dancing Moon Songcast. You can find all my music and all of my lyrics at scottsimpsonmusic.com. Try to put out a new podcast every Friday so far. I've been successful in that. I haven't missed a Friday yet since I started. So I plan to continue doing that. I hope you'll join me again for our next song when we come back again on Dancing Moon Songcast. Until then, be well.